Here in New Jersey last year, two young girls committed suicide after being bullied at school and online. Have you noticed how the reaction to what's perpetrated and harms on social media comes usually after the harm is done rather than either during or right yet before? One of the schools now prevents kids from having their phones with them during classes. So what? What's to stop them from resuming their bullying and body shaming after school dismisses? Are laws the answer? Maybe tech filters on the part of social media companies? There are always ways around those. So let's look at some options that are more realistic and effective. To do that, we're joined by a senior policy analyst in technology and innovation with Americans for Prosperity, James Chernowski. How are you today, James?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for bringing, I think, a better directed attention to this issue. AmericansForProsperity.org is a website. You can read about how James is putting a focus on this and other tech issues, along with the other issues that the organization puts in front of you with some facts and some sanity. I mentioned our laws, the answer to what kids are facing, because from peers to predators, it's not safe out there on social media for our kids or a lot of adults when you think about it. But some politicians in California think they have a solution. What are the details about what they are putting out in the forefront?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a proposal out in California that would seek to basically verify the ages of all these children that are going onto social media, and then if they are a minor account holder, that it would restrict their ability to access social media between the hours of 12 a.m. and 6 p. Between 12 a.m. and 6 a.m. and then from 9 a.m. to like 3 p.m., so basically during school hours. And then it also, I believe, tries to go and force them to turn off certain design features, claiming that they are addictive, like infinite scroll loops or things of that nature. So that's the crux of what that proposal is aimed to do in California.
Having said that, let's just start with that age verification first. You really think, I think we've all applied to websites, or whether it's with the Super Bowl in mind, one of those gambling websites, they ask for age authorization. As far as I know, the only way that could be proven factual is if you ask for a social security number, and even then you could probably scam it through that. That's not exactly a secure way to make sure that someone under 18 isn't applying to whatever it is you're offering online.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So, I mean, the problem that comes with age verification is that especially if you're imposing liability on the companies, which many of these proposals often do, if they fail to comply, what ends up happening is that the company is going to take the most stringent method possible to go and comply with the law to avoid that exposure to liability, right? So basically what would happen here is, to your point that you just mentioned before, in order to sign up for like one of these social media web services, they might ask you for your social security number. They might ask you for your driver's license or some other kind of government-issued ID. The problem that comes up with that is, as you kind of mentioned, people can kind of get around those tools pretty easily. When it comes to age verification, they can also go and insert a VPN, a virtual private network, that lets them basically use any IP address that's not in the state of California if they want to. And that's not necessarily easy to go and identify and figure out the true location of an individual as a result of that. So, there are many problems with this. And then I think the bigger issue that comes too is that it would apply to all users. It wouldn't necessarily just apply to kids because they're looking for parental consent, right? Which means that now mom has to prove that she's in fact the mom of the kid that's on the social media platform. And this also presents a free speech issue because now all of a sudden you have a hard identity being linked to every single account online. And when there are people who are trying to express themselves, they might, you know, be less inclined to do so out of fear of retaliation from somebody from the government or from some other powerful figure out there.
And laws have been tried before and they get challenged in court, especially if it has anything to do with privacy and the fact that in most cases, a policy that is aimed to help a portion of the user population winds up having to be accepted or used by the entire user population. That's where the trouble begins for these laws, and they usually and quickly and succinctly get their plug pulled.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's coming from a good place, right? I think, as you kind of mentioned at the outset, there's there certainly is a lot of issues going on and that kids are facing online, whether it's cyberbullying or body shaming or other kinds of issues. And I certainly understand and respect the desire to want to go and have something that solves that. But with many of these proposals that are out there, they just run afoul of the First Amendment, which makes it a non-starter in my book. I think that if we want to go and, you know, tackle the issues that are surrounding kids, it's number one, I think acknowledging that it's not just simply blaming it on social media. There's a lot of other factors that are at play here. And we need to go and focus on more holistic solutions and not necessarily rely on the government to be the chief executor here. Nothing quite replaces, what I think is very effective in terms of having something going on at home that can better help these kids navigate this process online.
Well, that was something that the Mayo Clinic actually has addressed recently. They came through with five simple tips, really, if you think about this. Set reasonable limits, monitor your teen's accounts. In other words, mom and dad, be a parent, not a friend for your child. Explain what's not okay. Encourage face-to-face contact with friends. There's a novelty these days. And and talk about social media. If there's a story on, like I referenced or the two tragic deaths here in New Jersey last year, sit down and talk with the kid, with your kids about what happened to those children to discover whether or not they're drifting toward that darkness.
Yeah, absolutely. And nothing replaces being present for your children at home and being a good parent to help them out in that respect. And if you want to have, tools to better control and tailor your child's online experience, they are easily there. And you can very, very easily go and find processes to go and put those on your phone, whether it's directly through your iPhone, if you're using that, or even on Android, or even directly on Facebook, Instagram. Many of these social media platforms do have parental controls available too that are definitely out there and that people should totally look that up. And on the flip side too, I think there's even a role that, our government can play insofar as like within the educational system, trying to have kids learn about social media literacy more broadly speaking. So that way they better understand, because there are upsides to social media. Actually, during the pandemic, it was one of the few things that helped keep kids feeling better and connected to their sense of community since they were locked up and forced to do remote learning for the better part of a year and change on average, right? But also understanding what the downsides are too. So that way, when they are experiencing cyberbullying, they know how to go and navigate that better than what they might be doing right now.
So James Chernersky, who is Senior Policy Analyst in Technology and Innovation with Americans for Prosperity, AmericansForProsperity.org, their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas getting into your wheelhouse. If you go to Google and do a search for, and put this in quotation marks because it narrows your search this way, apps for parents to monitor kids online, there's a lot of apps out there. Now, there are some free ones I know, but what I saw with those were they're kind of weak when it comes to monitoring social media activity because that's the brunt of the load. But going through several different review lists, I found that almost a consensus, there's one that's called Kaspersky Safe Kids. It's only $21 per year per user, has 24/7 GPS, real-time alerts, screen time management, YouTube safe search, social media monitoring. There are tools out there that parents can quickly and for very little expense include in their creating a safety net for their child online.
Absolutely. And like you said, $21 for the Kaspersky option for parental controls is certainly a great thing. It's a minimal investment in terms of having something that then goes and gives you peace of mind with respect to your kid. But like I said, even on the devices themselves, they have free tools that are available. It's not going to be perfect, and even your best tools aren't going to be perfect. Even Kaspersky, I imagine, is not going to be perfect. But at the end of the day, it's better than the alternative, which is just giving your kid a $1,000 iPhone with no filters on it whatsoever, right? So that's why it's so important that parents need to go and step up and really kind of meet that moment. And I know that it's hard because not every single parent is technologically savvy. But, again, these resources are out there. There are organizations that try to help connect parents with these resources so that they can be better informed. And that's really where I think even the companies, if they want, can go and invest time and energy and resources into trying to connect with these very parents that are struggling with figuring out what to do and how to navigate this increasingly complicated and complex online ecosystem that their kids are growing up in.
Here's an idea for the social media companies, as opposed to appearing at these one committee hearing after another, where a lot is said, nothing ever gets done. I think Zuckerberg has an apology committed to memory at this point with the number of times he's had to say it. How about if one of these companies, maybe all of them would even be better, came up with an app that's effective and that works well within their framework, since they know it best, and make that available to parents? I bet that would make them very popular.
Yeah, so funny you mentioned that. I don't know if you remember this, but it was a few years back, like Facebook, because of the responses that were going on with kids' online safety, they proposed going and creating a kid-centric, basically variant for Instagram, which is where a lot of the teen youth certainly hang out relative to Facebook, right? But a lot of people shot that down because they thought it was like some kind of weird play by Meta to go and collect data on children or something. And it's not, that's just not necessarily the case. I think that they wanted to go and have an application, an environment where kids can be kids and not have to worry about it. But something that you mentioned before that I think is worth going back to is like encouraging the face-to-face interactions. And also, you know, there were studies coming out recently that showed the average amount of time that children were spending outside has declined, and that's not a good thing either, right? Like getting them involved in sports and intramurals and other kinds of activities and groups is also another great way of having them spend less time in front of a screen and more time having those human-to-human connections.
For you listening, I know what we all want. We want safety for our children in every way possible, everywhere possible. Certainly social media with Instagram and Snapchat, the ones that are aimed more so at the younger ages, more so than Facebook and even X. Two words probably are the foundation for achieving that goal: parental involvement. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't have to be a tech wizard to make it happen either. We've given you hopefully shared some tips, and if you caught it on the fly, we'll have the podcast obviously later up on the website too after the show, so you can review some of what James and I talked about here, because information, as I say often and because it's true, is the empowerment that you need to find solutions, and certainly in this case that does hold true. He is the Senior Policy Analyst in Technology and Innovation with Americans for Prosperity, AmericansForProsperity.org. James Chernowski, thanks so much for bringing some reality and better focus into a very serious issue. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.